Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, 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 and a very warm welcome into Tech Talk from RNIB Connect Radio, our opportunity to get together each week and explore the world of technology from a blind or partially sighted perspective. I'm your host, Dave Williams. Good to be with you once again. This week, we will be catching up with the recent Sight City exhibition in Frankfurt that claims to be the world's largest fair of assistive technology products and services for blind and partially sighted people, and we'll be interested to hear what you and our co-hosts make of some of the offerings on display. And we'll also be learning about how AI is being used to detect advanced macular degeneration. So that's all to come this time on Tech Talk. Welcome in to our co-hosts, Callum Stoneman and Hubert Pavalkovich. Let's come to each of you. Callum, what's grabbing your attention in the world of technology this week?
Well, Be My Eyes has just launched on Windows. So you can now get that on Windows 10 and Windows 11 devices, which is nice. I haven't had a chance to play with it yet because it literally came out yesterday at the time of recording, but apparently it's got the usual Be My Eyes features. You can make a call, you can use Be My AI, of course, and there's a feature on there to describe your screen, which I can imagine being really useful.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to get a little demo of that, because I imagine the use cases on Windows are going to be slightly different, aren't they? Because when you're using your phone or your tablet, you're sort of waving that around and trying to get information about your environment. You're less likely to be doing that with your Windows laptop. So is it just about screen sharing, or can you kind of hold things up to the camera as well? How does that work?
Well, yeah, this is the thing that I'm intrigued by, because if you can, I'm not sure if you can do this, but if you can share your screen while on a call as well, you know, so call the volunteers and then say, you know, what's this website doing, or what's, you know, is there an error message here or something, and share your screen, that could be really useful. I don't think you can do that on the iPhone app, can you?
Well, and the other question, of course, is about privacy, right? Because we've heard last week, Microsoft Build, they announced their Copilot 2, and lots of people asking questions about, well, you know, if we're, you know, photographing people's screens or recording people's screens, what does that mean in terms of GDPR and safeguarding and all of that, right? So some stuff to work through there, I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. Hubert, how are you?
I'm not too bad. I've got a bit of a question for you both. It's a bit of a discussion topic. So with Global Accessibility Awareness Day taking place a few weeks ago, as of this recording, some of the new features, improvements to VoiceOver is more VoiceOver voices, a customizable voice rotor, and custom volume control. Not much more detail has been given to my knowledge. But my question is, are we reaching the stage where we've got too many voiceover voices or too many screen reader voices? Can you have too many? What are your thoughts on this?
Well, this always happens with screen reading, right? I used to work for a screen reader manufacturer. Of course, Jaws has been around for decades, and salespeople always want new features to shout about, right? You need to have something for the marketing teams to talk about, but the users usually want things to be fixed or stability and stuff like that, but that's not hugely marketable. So you always end up with this kind of tension between, well, we've got to put some new stuff in because we've got to have something to talk about. But then the user's like, yes, but you haven't fixed the old thing that's not working properly.
Yeah, it's I see this every time when they do these Global Accessibility Awareness Day announcements. They do these really good features, you know, because there are other things for other disabilities as well. It's not just new voiceover stuff, but every time there's some people going, yay, that's brilliant. And then there's other people going, yeah, but what about this problem that's been around since, you know, iOS 17.3 and it's still not fixed and it's terrible. So in terms of whether you can have too many voices, I mean, choice is always a good thing, but I must admit, I don't think I've really been in the iPhone voice, well, any of the voices for my screen reader for a good few years. I've just kind of found a voice and I stick to it. The only exception is sometimes when I'm doing demos, I'll switch over to that northern, new northern voice.
Oh yeah, just listeners love that. It. Yeah,
yeah.
And
yeah.
I like Jamie. That's what I Jamie's use on voiceover. Yeah, but I don't know if choice is always a good thing. I wonder whether it takes resources away from some of the stuff that needs fixing. Speaking of fixes, you may have noticed last week that Sonos updated their app.
Yeah, they did.
And early indications are Touch MDF. That they might have fixed some of those issues that we were talking a little bit a while back.
Yeah, they have. It's a bit easier to explore by touch now. Well, I say a bit easier. It's possible to explore by touch, which it wasn't previously. It's still not great. If you're one of these people who've turned off automatic updates, I'd say still hold on a little bit. It's still not as nice as it was compared to the old app, but it is a little bit easier to use now. It's a little bit less painful. They have said it should be up to the usual standard of the old app by, I think they've said mid-June or the end of June, so fairly soon. Okay. But yeah, they are working on it.
Going in the right direction, but obviously yeah. We would have preferred not to have had the regressions in the first place. Callum, you've mentioned on Tech Talk previously that you work for BT, so I do have to ask you about this announcement last week where BT have said that they are delaying forcing customers to switch from traditional landlines to digital landlines. I think the deadline for that now has been put back to 2027.
Yeah.
I imagine you probably can't speak to that directly, but personally, do you have any thoughts about what this means for customers?
They've delayed this a couple of times now, and as you said, yeah, it's something that I can't speak to directly. It's nothing to do with me, my department, but I think we just forget how much was based around these old-fashioned, you know, copper phone lines. You know, and there's all sorts that they've had to think about, you know, emergency systems, alarm systems, a lot of those sorts of things. And of course, accessibility of, because home phone accessibility has gone downhill. There's not as many like talking handsets as there used to be. So people are still clinging onto those, you know, if we're talking from a blindness perspective. So yeah, I think it's a good thing. If it gives them time to sort it out, customers don't have to worry as much, because you would hope that for that long of a delay, things would be thought about better and things will be put in place. So yeah, I can see why they've done it.
The issue being widely reported is about alarm systems and emergency use cases where somebody depends on their traditional landline to get help in an emergency situation. And there's obviously, you know, battery backups and other systems, mobile technologies and other things that can be used. And I haven't really found any data to tell us about how performant some of that stuff is. Okie doke, thank you very much, Hubert Pavalkovich, Callum Stoneman. Stick around, it's another very packed Tech Talk. You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Dave Williams, reporting from Site City 2024. I figured we should catch up with our friends at Envision and find out what's new. And who better to do that than Rhea, who is the communications specialist with Envision. Welcome into RNIB Connect Radio, Rhea. Just tell us a little bit about what's new with Envision.
Thank you, Dave. You have a great voice, actually. So we have some updates regarding the Scribe Scene on both the glasses and on the app. Yeah, so on the Envision app, our AI assistant, Ask Envision, is now available when you're describing any scenes around you. So you now have the possibility to capture a scene, pick between a short description or a detailed description, or better yet, immediately ask a question about what's around you.
And what do you think are some of the practical use cases for that?
Yeah, that's a great question. So for example, if you're in your living room and you would like a short description, then you go ahead and press the describe scene, and then you'll get a short description of what's around you. And then you can ask, for example, where are the glasses in the living room?
Right, okay. And this is a feature that was previously only available to documents, is that right?
Yes, and it's still available on the documents. So our scan text feature as well on the app can be accessed with Ask Envision.
Yeah. And then when you scan a document, obviously you can ask follow-up questions. And what you're saying is that your new functionality, that's going to become available for the Scene channel as well.
Yes, exactly. And it's already available on the app. I have here with me Karthik as well.
Hi there.
Yeah, welcome back into RNIB Connect Radio. Good to have you here as well. So we were just talking about the latest news from Envision. I hear you're working on making the AI capability available for the Scene mode. Is that correct?
Yeah, so the whole idea is to improve that so that it can actually become a conversational AI. So it's not just a one-way street where you just ask, where it'll just offer you a description, but you can actually have a conversation, right? And you can actually have a to and fro with the AI as if it is an assistant and just ask all the questions that you want it to.
And what do you think makes it unique in terms of Envision? You know, what is it about the Envision AI experience that is different? Because there are lots of products. As I walk around Site City, there are lots of reading products, there are lots of devices now that have GPT integration where you can ask follow-up questions. What is it about your solution that you think makes it really special?
Sure. I think it boils down to like three things, like basically. One is the conversational aspect of an AI. It's actually enabled by incredible speed, right? It's only a conversation when like a response time of the AI is very, very fast. So it has to be like a snappy, you know, like less than a second kind of a response for it actually to feel like a conversation, which is only thing that Envision has been able to achieve. So our AI can actually give you a response to any question in under a second. So that's the conversational aspect of it that we're focusing on. The other thing that we're building is a personal assistant, right? So it is an assistant that won't just offer you just like a bland readout of what's in front of you. You can also make it personalized on the basis of you. So if you are, as a person, have a preferences, if you as a person have dietary restrictions, if you ask Envision to read a menu, it won't just give you a readout, it can also give you a recommendations because it knows that you are a vegetarian or it knows that you have a gluten allergy, for example.
There you go. You've met me. you've met me before. So fantastic. And so I know you haven't yet announced a date or anything for this capability in the Scene mode. Is it likely to be weeks or months?
So it's out as a beta as of now. So we have a group of beta testers. So if there are people who are interested in testing this as a beta, you're open to people applying for it. They simply needs to go to envision-assistant.com, and there is a form there that they can fill in to just sign up for a beta. So we have the beta until end of June, and hopefully by end of June we are in a position where we're actually able to launch this to the public. That's the timeline that we're looking at. So until end of June, it's going to be a beta, and hopefully if everything is well, in the first week of July, it should be out for all the users.
Envision-assistant.com. Brilliant. Karthik and Ray from Envision, thank you so much.
Always a pleasure to be on with you. Thank you.
You're listening to RNIB Connect Radio. This is Dave Williams at Site City 2024 in Frankfurt. And I'm with Arsene from Poi Labs. Welcome into RNIB Connect Radio. Just tell us a little bit about your organization and the solution that you are developing.
Yeah, thank you. So we are providing indoor navigation for visually impaired and blind in large venues like airports, malls, museums, offices, in fact, in any indoor spaces. So we have, it's a mobile application-based solution. First, we digitalize the map of the venue. We get the map, we create a digital map, we create the walk paths and embed all the information available in the venue. And then the user only needs to download the mobile app. So in the map, they can customize it. They can change the colors, font size. We have also customization features for navigation, so they can change if they want to use elevators or escalators. They can also adjust the direction, like clock direction or simple left and right direction. And in the app, they can see all the available points inside the venue. For example, if it is a mall, they see all the stores, all the restrooms, all the emergency exits, all the information is available. So there are mainly two features. The first one is a discovery mode, so they can easily walk inside the venue and learn about nearby points. If it's a mall, when they walk, they said, store A on your left-hand side, there's a fashion, so they can understand and explore the venue on their own. If they want to go a specific place, they can filter out, search, write anything on the search list, or we also provide nearest options, so they can just get navigation to nearest points. So when they get the navigation, they get a brief info about the route, and they are always informed about all the points, like go straight for 10 meters, turn right now, you are at elevator, go to second floor. So it's a navigation, turn-by-turn navigation, and makes them easier to explore and navigate any indoor spaces.
Okay, and your mobile app, that's available on iOS and Android?
Yeah, it works with all available phones.
Okay, and that's going to work obviously with VoiceOver or TalkBack or any magnification software.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right, so it's an indoor navigation system. So this is only going to work in environments where somebody has gone and created that digital map, and that then sort of begs the question, with a shopping mall, for example, you know, sometimes shops close and new ones open, or things move. How easy or difficult is it to keep that content current?
Yeah, we generally have agreements with the venue owners, so they know that they have the service. So we have a platform, they can easily update the name of the stores or location, they can turn them like on-off kind of things. We also have options to, for example, if there's a problem in an elevator, they can also state that it's not working. So it's a platform, it's in the cloud, so it's very easy to manage the system.
And what level of accuracy do you get when moving around? Of course, many of us are already using GPS solutions outdoors, and we're familiar with the idea that, you know, GPS will get us to the right street sometimes, but probably not to the door of the building. We need to use our core mobility skills. So if I was using your app in a shopping mall, for example, will it take me to the door of the shop? Will it take me to the counter? How much resolution do you have?
It depends on the venue. We use some sensors like Bluetooth beacons. We install them. We also use the existing sensors inside the smartphones. So we have an indoor positioning technology. We have up to 1 meter accuracy, but it changes depending on the venue. So it's around 1 to 5 meters. But generally, it's more than enough to understand the location. And now we are trying to introduce additional AI features to locate the entrance of the places, for example, in hotels, to verify if it is the correct door by just checking the numbers and stuff like that. In metro stations, for example, we also try to detect the doors, avoiding the gaps and the other spaces in between the two trains there.
Right. And what would you say the unique benefits of your solution? There are lots of indoor navigation projects around at the moment, some of them using bidirectional optical codes, some of them using Bluetooth beacons, some of them like yours where you scan the environment and build that digital map. What would you say is your unique selling point?
So the first thing is it's accuracy, and we are available in iOS and Android. And you don't need to scan any QR code, because some technologies needs to scan some QR codes, or they use some additional LiDARs kind of, only available in Pro devices, like iPhone Pro devices. So our for the end user, you don't need additional equipment. It's the easiest part, and the accuracy is good. On top of that, we also have a version for all visitors. So for the venue perspective, it makes sense to invest in a technology that's available for all. So by that, they can more willing to just launch the solution in their venue.
And what's the model? Is it that you hope that venues wanting to roll out this solution, that they will help fund the development, or is there a subscription to the end user? What's the model with that?
Yeah, it's free to end user. We don't charge any end user. So we have an agreement with the mall, or the venue owner. So they pay a setup fee at the beginning and then a monthly subscription.
And how's that going?
It's generally we have an agreement for 4 years because the battery life of the sensors are 4 years. So in every 4 years, we just renew the agreement.
Okay. And where are you operating just now?
Currently, I mean, we recently moved our company to UK. We have more than 500 venues in 82 cities. So we have airports, malls, museums. Currently, we don't have any available point in UK right now. We are doing some pilots with some hotels. So it will be probably available at the end of this year.
Okay. And we at R&IB are hopefully going to collaborate to trial your system in the UK.
Exactly. We are open to provide it free in your venues to showcase the solution to all people and venue owners. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, wonderful to chat with you, Ersin. Where can we learn more about Poi Labs?
Yeah, you can reach our website, poilabs.com. So you can just reach out our website. You can send email also to me. My name is Ersin, ersin@poilabs.com. So you can also reach me personally.
Okay, so that's poilabs.com.
Yes, correct.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Have a good day.
Thanks to Dave Williams there from Site City in Frankfurt. And of course, Dave is with us now. You're getting about a bit lately, aren't you? All these conferences and events. So how was it? How was Site City?
Well, the reason I was there, Callum, was to meet with the European Blind Union's Braille Working Group. So this is a group that represents Braille authorities from across Europe to try and identify what are the common areas that we need to work on together. How can we share resources, avoid duplicating efforts? Of course, we've got the 200th anniversary of the invention of Braille coming up pretty soon. So how can we coordinate our activities? So I was in those meetings. We'd also, in the Braille Working Group, conducted a survey over the winter of Braille display users. Around 1,000 people had responded to that. And the other reason we were there in Frankfurt was to present the findings from that survey to the Braille display manufacturers. So we're going to be hearing more about that in due course. But of course, while I was there, I took the opportunity to get round the exhibition and record those interviews with some of the suppliers. And Site City, it's right in the centre of Frankfurt, in a huge convention centre. And the event itself is over four floors. You've got all the usual suspects, of course, but then stuff that you don't usually see at, say, a Site Village event as well. So it does feel like the world and his wife are making reading products that have AI to interrogate documents, you know, tell me about the vegetarian options and all of that. I think that's a road well travelled now. Lots of indoor navigation solutions as well, and lots of people doing work with wearable tech, so smart glasses. So they are certainly the themes. Multi-line Braille continues apace. There's a company called Inventivio. They've got a 10,000 pin refreshable tactile display that was very exciting. And some stuff that's not really technology that maybe feels a little bit left field. I went on this kind of recumbent tandem. That was quite fun as well. And as well as the exhibition, there are panel discussions, presentations, other meetings that also take place in and around the exhibition.
Is there anything that you think events like Site Village can learn from how Site City is organised, whether it's from the exhibitors to how it's run and organised?
I was very impressed at Site City that when I went in to the sort of the lobby area, they had right there tactile maps of the event showing where the exhibitors were, lots of information in multiple formats, and I know that Site Village do some of that as well. They also had tactile flooring around the exhibition, so there was a tactile strip that kind of guided you along each of the aisles between the exhibition stands, and you can easily feel that with your feet and your cane, and it also contrasted quite well against the carpet. I think the strip was kind of brighter against a kind of a dark background of the carpet. The tactile strip changed texture as you approached a corner, and also as you were walking along, there were kind of spurs that sort of led off directly towards each of the exhibition stands. So I felt that was a really useful navigational aid, you know, to kind of get you around the event. Of course, the risk with that is occasionally people do stand and have conversations on that strip. You know, that's when sort of collisions can occur. So I think it was brilliant that that company was there. Inclusive.de is the company that provided that tactile flooring, and they've got a range of products for indoor and outdoor use to put tactile markings on the ground, which are really useful for helping us get around and about.
Yeah, it really does sound like an interesting... It's kind of funny, isn't it, that we talk about all these technology solutions for indoor navigation. And of course, they are suitable for, you know, mainstream venues, I guess, but... It's funny, isn't it? An event like this, you just put some tactiles down. Some tactile, you know, different tactile feeling. That's kind of, that makes a big difference.
Well, and I think it's always important to remember that as much as we love our technology, you know, we've talked about Voice Vista, for example, for outdoor navigation, you know, great app, and lots of other apps out there as well. But all of that is augmentative, right? Because yeah, batteries fail. Let's be honest, technology fails sometimes. You don't always have the best coverage. Sometimes it can be a bit of a distraction. And the most important thing is to focus on those core skills of using your cane, using your guide dog, you know, being able to ask for assistance when you need it. You know, those are the core things, the foundation on which all this technology kind of augments.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, sounds like a really good... really packed, interesting event. It's given us a packed show at least, which is always good. So yeah, cheers Dave, and we'll be hearing more from Sight City a little bit later.
Making technology accessible. Tech Talk.
News now here on RNIB Connect Radio about a project being supported by researchers at Queen's University Belfast, which aims to revolutionise the care of age-related macular degeneration, AMD. The project named iScreen will develop an artificial intelligence AI programme to identify and monitor the early stages of age-related macular degeneration through equipment that we might find in our local high street opticians. Dr. Ruth Hogg from the Centre for Public Health, Queen's University Belfast, who is leading the project, joins me now to tell me more about iScreen. Hello, Ruth, and welcome to RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, delighted to speak to you today, Toby.
Ruth, we know how important it is for the early detection of age-related macular degeneration, AMD. And I believe if you are able to detect the condition early enough, it is possible, especially for wet AMD, to, in a way, sort of, I suppose, halt or stabilise the damage that AMD might cause. How does iScreen sort of detect this? And is iScreen maybe a bit faster than an eye consultant in detecting the early stages of AMD?
I think the main issue is the treatments for wet AMD at present, we know work best the earlier that they are given. So because they tend to halt progression and halt a further leakage of fluid, etc. So an ideal scenario, the very earliest stage of that leakage would be picked up and referred through to an eye doctor. But the issue with that is that that often happens without causing significant symptoms, and it may be several months or years down the line before a patient then is either picked up at their local optometrist and then referred through, or experiences the symptoms and goes to get it seen about. So I think the real conundrum at the minute is trying to shorten that period and try and get people picked up as early as possible. So the optical coherence tomography, or OCT, is a really good way of getting a retinal imaging that gives excellent information and can pick up the very early stages of the disease. And we recognise that they're not now just in hospital departments. Lots of optometry practices, both in the UK and across Europe, have now adopted them as part of their standard instruments, and patients tend to both live closer to optometrists and see them more regularly. So if we can use those images and use these artificial intelligence algorithms that can pick up the earliest stages, we're hoping then to get people transferred into secondary care for treatment quicker and more efficiently, and therefore that they'll preserve more of their sight.
And this project has obviously had funding from across Europe. And was it sort of an idea that came about from yourself and other researchers getting together and looking at how AI could be used for good? Because some people may be a little bit wary of AI and how it all works and stuff and things like that. Was it something that, you know, sort of as a researcher, you thought, well, this sort of technology is out there and it could be used to sort of help with detection of AMD and other conditions?
Yep. So while I lead the group in Belfast, we're partners of the bigger project, which is being led from the University in Vienna by Professor Ursula Schmidt-Erfurth. And her group has been very much at the forefront of developing these algorithms. They developed one of the first commercially available algorithms that's used in treatment and monitoring response to treatment in hospitals. So I guess for them, they have been immersed probably for most of the last decade on developing this technology. And now the important thing is thinking through places and ways that it can be used best to improve patient pathways and improve efficiencies within a healthcare delivery, so resources are used best and that patients get treated promptly, etc. So I think that's where they then decided to consider this optometry-based model. And then in Northern Ireland, we have a population-based study that's ongoing. And I think we were an attractive site for data collection because we can use some of the participants from that as part of our study group because they have been followed for a number of years. So I think that's how it all came together. But within the UK, we're delighted to have a site and be part of this exciting project.
When iScreen is up and running in our local high street opticians, how will it all work? And will it be just something that we all might sort of experience when we go for our regular eye tests for checking of conditions using AI such as AMD?
Yeah, I think so. Most people will be familiar with getting retinal imaging taken when they're at their optometry practice. So maybe a standard fundus photograph, or you maybe attend an optometrist that has one of these OCTs. So I think, you know, more broadly, these algorithms are being developed not just for AMD, but for, you know, glaucoma and a diabetic retinopathy. And there could be a host of these algorithms that then would be applied to your retinal images to help the optometrist decide your risk of progressing to any of these disorders. So, you know, there's a lot of work that eventually could be then applied in that kind of context, that you get your images taken and then the images get run through these programs and, you know, a report generated. There's also obviously a lot of interest between the risk of other diseases in your body and the signs that may be picked up from retinal imaging. So there's groups in London, etc., that are looking at even using retinal imaging for looking at a long-term risk of developing, you know, dementia and Parkinson's and things like that. So who knows, in 10 or 20 years, you could get, you know, quite a comprehensive readout from your retinal imaging on not just risk of eye conditions, but also other health conditions as well.
Is there a timescale for when iScreen will be up and running in our local high street opticians?
So I would say, given the timescale of this project, which will be critical for showing the safety of this way of managing patients, it's probably sort of within 5 years that if all went to plan and everything went well, that then it could begin to be rolled out more broadly.
And if listeners would maybe like to follow the development of iScreen, is there a website that they can go to follow the project?
Yeah, so the website where people can go is i-screen.eu.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Dr. Ruth Hock, for chatting with me here on RNIB Connect Radio and telling me more about iScreen, which I'm sure we will be following here on the station to track its progress. Thank you, Ruth.
No problem at all. It's been lovely to talk. Thank you.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Time to head back to Frankfurt now as we rejoin Dave Williams at Site City.
I'm with Fabian from Voxy Web, who make Voxy Vision, which is a reading device. Fabian, just talk us through what's new with Voxy Vision. There are lots of these solutions at the moment that are using AI to recognize documents and information about the environment. What would you say is your unique selling point?
This is, first of all, a portable reading machine. Yeah. So we have a foldable stand you can bring everywhere. And you can use the Voxy Vision either on its stand or held in your hand. And indeed, at the beginning of this year, we released a new AI feature. So you can take a picture and have either a short or long description of your environment or your document. You can also summarize text, and also you can ask a question. For example, if you are in front of a menu, you can ask what is the cheapest of. If I am allergic to tomatoes, can you give me the plate without tomatoes? Or you can, in front of a bank statement, ask for the operation above 50 euro, for example. Mm. So there is no limit with AI. And on the other side, you need internet. But in the future, maybe it will be embedded in the Voxy Vision.
Okay, so tell me a little bit about your target audience for Voxy Vision, because it's a package, isn't it? So you've got the stand, you've got the scanning device, which feels a lot like a smartphone, but then that has a special design surround so that it guides your fingers to the buttons at the bottom of the screen. There are little indentations there where you can put your fingers. So you're packaging all of this together, so it's not necessarily somebody who's already using a smartphone, maybe somebody who could benefit from the technology but maybe would struggle using apps and things like that.
You have answered the questions, yes. So the main target is maybe elderly people who are not tech specialized, who maybe just have a feature phone with not a smartphone. And with the Voxy Vision, they can have the best tech solution, but with a very easy way to use it. But on the other side, we have also a power user we can use in the business environment, because it's an offline device. So we have both kind of user. We can be used also by blind people, also by elderly with low vision. So we can have all different kind of people, but really our main target is elderly people with low tech knowledge.
Okay, and do you offer, you know, training and support with that as well, given the audience?
Not our company. There is a tutorial inside the device, but we don't train ourselves people.
Right, because often it can be overwhelming when you're getting started with technology and which app and so on. And I was just speaking to your colleague earlier. This isn't really a platform on which I would put my own app. So if I'm already using an app on a smartphone, I'm not really your target.
Not at all. And just to reply, we have also a basic mode for elderly people with very few possibility. We have disabled a lot of things just to focus on the AI and reading machine feature. So for elderly people, it can be a reply. And yes, this is a closed system. We buy the device and the stand. It's not an app for iOS user, for example.
Gotcha. Okay. And I'm just feeling the stand. It's quite a rugged stand. I don't know what, 60 centimeters off the table, something like that. And then the kind of phone-like device sits in the top, but this can all fold up and
Absolutely, be
stored away. And then at the base of the stand, there's a document guide, so you can put your piece of paper into a corner, into a 90-degree kind of right angle, so it would line it up with the camera. And then do you need to make sure that you've got plenty of ambient light, or does it have a flash, or does it need to light up the document?
We have a low light sensor, so even in dark room, it can be useful. And you can, we have also, if there is very dark room, you can use a flash automatically.
Okay. And so you've got the document mode. And then there's the scene mode where you can lift the device off and then take a picture of something around you. Tell us a bit more about that.
There is an auto-read. You just have to place the VoxeVision on the stand.
Yeah.
And then you place your document. And what is nice is going to detect the hand. So, for example, if you are an elderly people that takes time to place the document, it won't happen nothing. And once you remove your hand, it's directly... taking a picture and scan the document.
Okay, and tell us about the scene mode as well, where you can take a picture of the room and it will tell you what's in the room.
Yes, it's very easy. You choose AI menu and you take a picture with the middle button, because on the button of the VoxeVision you have three buttons with a finger guide.
So these are like indentations, so it's kind of like holes that let your finger through to where the button is.
Yeah. And you take a picture, and after that, you can choose a short description for a one-sentence reply, or long description, or summarize. And it's going to describe with very accuracy the scene. And it's incredible with a lot of detail. So it's insane as the AI capabilities.
Yeah, and then you can ask questions. And yes. I think you alluded to this a little bit earlier on, that you're hopeful that you can get to a place where you don't need the internet.
Yeah, but it will be in the future, but for the moment you need to have internet. So yes, for the moment, but in the future we hope to make it everything offline.
Okay. Is there anything else that you're able to share at this point? Any collaborations coming up, anything in that area in terms of how this technology is likely to evolve? Will it always be a handheld camera, for example?
Yeah, we're working. We start working with ARX, vision headset. So the aim is to keep the VoxeVision inside your pocket, and with the camera on your head, you can take picture and navigate and have the description of AI or document. So it will be very complementary between the two products.
Excellent. That's ARX Vision, ARX Vision, the wearable camera. Hopefully at some point we'll provide access to VoxeVision. Well, fantastic. Thank you so much, Fabien, for your time.
Thank you.
If anybody wants to learn more about VoxeVision, what's the best way to do that?
You can contact our reseller in UK is VisionEd. So you can contact them to have more information or demo.
Excellent. Okay, we know VisionAid. So, VisionAid are the people to talk to in the UK if you want more information about VoxeVision. Well, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
I'm with Daryl from Solar Grove, who are a company based out of Florida in the United States, who make a solar-powered Daisy player. But it gets a little bit more complicated than that, Daryl, because your customers are organizations around the world that are looking for a really easy way to distribute their Daisy books, so people like RNIB, but we've all got slightly different requirements. Just kind of explain that for our listeners.
Yes, absolutely, because what we find is, like, people in Africa, one country will say, we want it with a flashlight for our low vision people. And then the other country will say, no, absolutely no flashlight, because the family members will steal it and keep it just for a flashlight. And we want them to use it for an audiobook. So we're trying to help different people in different countries. In Vanuatu, for instance, there they said it absolutely has to have a flashlight. So we try to help our clients, our customers, as best we can. And some people want speed control. Others say, oh, no, that's too complicated. And others people say, well, we have to have it with a micro SD card. And other people say, no, we don't want them listening to their own content. We want to just give them the audiobooks that we want them to have. For instance, a school that is just doing textbooks, they don't want the students using it as their music player. So they will say no SD card, for instance.
Right.
So, yeah, all those make different variations.
Those make different variations, but just go back to basics and explain for our listeners what you are holding in your hand. What is the kind of the core product that you have at its heart?
Well, at its heart, so it's a small handheld device that is virtually indestructible. So they're solar powered, so you don't ever have to plug it in if you don't want to. Just put it in the sun or where it can get sunlight. They're shock resistant and heat resistant to 70, 75 degrees. And they are water resistant. So if they fall in the toilet, it'll be okay. That's not going to be the case with the cell phone or with, some of the more expensive devices.
Was that degrees C?
Yes.
Okay. So, I was going to say, because we do get 75 degrees Fahrenheit in the UK. So
So that would be Celsius. Yeah.
Yeah. So very, very hot.
Very hot, indeed.
Yeah. Okay.
So it will be, it'll do okay. So on the hottest day in the sun in Mali, we had one of our persons testing our player, and they put the device out on the driveway and along with a thermometer. And they went back and checked 45 minutes later, and the thermometer had exploded, but the player was fine.
Goodness me. So, wow. So Solar Grove make a Daisy player that's perhaps known by different names around the world.
Yeah.
So in Australia, for example, it's known as the Envoy Connect. Is that right?
Correct. Yeah, the Envoy Connect. So Vision Australia was the first big partner that we had providing units specifically for the blind. And so in partnership with them, we really designed the Connect player for them so that they would be able to serve the blind and visually impaired people that they're trying to serve in Australia.
Excellent. And I have played with that iteration, and I've found it to be very lightweight. Just describe the dimensions, if you would, for listeners, because this is a really small, just slides into your back pocket. It's smaller than a cell phone. Right?
Yeah, smaller than almost all cell phones. If you can kind of think of, they're approximately, I would say, 7 centimeters long by about 3 wide. And maybe 1 centimeter thick. So they're actually quite lightweight and small. So they weigh about 70 grams.
Internal battery, obviously.
Internal battery. They're very efficient as well. So when it's fully charged, it will play at low volume or with earbuds for about 30 hours before it needs to be recharged. And so very efficient. And so most of our users are going to use it maybe 2 to 4 hours a day. So they're only going to need to charge it maybe once a week if they don't put it in the sun. And then we have others that they never plug it in. They just, whenever they're not using it, they leave it with the solar panel up by the window or on the desk where it's getting some sunlight. And it will be enough to keep the player always topped up, so that they don't actually ever have to plug it in.
Darryl, why don't you give us a little bit of a demo so we can hear what it sounds like.
Sure. So I have with me here the E2, which is one of the models that we use mostly with schools. And so it has 4 levels of navigation and then 3 sub-levels. So actually you have 7 levels of navigation with this player. And through the Daisy pipeline, you can actually take a Daisy book and choose to put it on here. So let me just turn it on. You will hear 1 beep. So there, it's on, and it will start playing.
This is the way the Matchbox, one of Hans Christian Andersen's first fairy tales, starts out. Like this soldier, Anderson's tales have marched across the world.
And then I can go to the next book.
The Jewish Maiden.
And the next book.
The Princess and the Bee.
So I can choose what book I want. And then let me go to playback speed control. So if I click the playback speed control, then it will give me one little beep letting me know that its speed control is on. And then my volume control becomes my speed control. So volume up becomes speed up.
Have you ever seen a very old chest, black with age, and covered with outlandish carved ornaments and curly
So if that's too fast, then we can slow it down.
It was just such a chest, handed down from some great-grandmother. Carved all up and down it.
So the speed control is actually quite good, and so that you can actually... even it doesn't change the pitch, so it's actually quite good.
Because many blind people do like listening to audiobooks sped up, and
Absolutely.
You're controlling all of that with tactile buttons that are on the top face of the unit, so you can feel by touch the shape. Some of the buttons are a little bit how would we say, convex, they kind of stick up. And some of them are a little bit concave, so they kind of got a little indentation in the center. Yeah. So they're tactilely different from one another.
Correct. And we always are trying to improve our player. And so even for some of our requests, they request that they be even more tactile or larger. And so we work with, again, our partners to serve them best as they need.
Okay. Well, fantastic. Well, that really, I think, gives us an idea of this beautifully lightweight, portable, slim, great battery life, 30 hours. That's certainly more than I get out of my cell phone.
and mine as well.
All right, brilliant stuff. Well, obviously, you're just listening to audiobooks on there. Will it play other kinds of content as well, Darryl?
Yeah, so any audio that you want to load, so lectures, My kids love listening to podcasts, so they will load podcasts, their favorite shows on the player. So it's not just for the blind, as you know. So because my kids, through me, you know, they can have access to this kind of technology. So they use it for podcasts, and then that keeps their cell phone free for communications, and so they can actually enjoy that or their favorite music. And the player, although it has a little speaker that we listen to, it has stereo capability through the headphones. So if you load stereo audio in high quality content, you will actually be able to enjoy great stereo through the headset. Of course, through the little speaker, you're not going to get that great audio. But so, my kids can enjoy their favorite music as well. So anything that's audio can be put on the player and enjoyed by the listeners.
Right, and it is just a player, right? You probably get asked all the time, like, will it record, or can I do this, that, and the other?
So, yeah, we do have another model that is the E1, which does have recorder and FM radio and playback speed control and micro SD card and all the other features. So that is the... we're still working because we just had to change chips on that, and so... that will be available in January, at the end of this year. And so at the beginning of next year, we'll be able to provide that, the top-of-the-line player, again, throughout the world.
Okay, so the Solar Grove portable Daisy player. Just a final question for you, Darryl, before you tell us where listeners can learn more. How do we get content on there? What's the best way to do that?
So there's two ways. So one is through the USB-C port, directly connecting to a computer, and the other way is someone just hand you a micro SD card with audio content, and you just put that micro SD card into the player and you can listen to it, and it handles all the major formats, MP3, WMA, and WAVE.
Yeah, and I wonder now, you know, with the smartphones with their USB-C ports, whether you might also be able to access it through your smartphone in the future.
That's one thing that we're wanting to look at, so that we can actually load content directly from to make our software so that it will work via an app on the cell phones, on the smartphones, so that they can then load content directly from their cell phone so they would be able to download audio or a lecture or music to their cell phone, and then just transfer it to their player.
Very cool. How do we find out more about Solar Grove?
Yeah, sgrove.com. You can go to sgrove.com, S as in solar, and then Grove, G-R-O-V-E.com, and you can find us there.
Brilliant. Thank you so much, Daryl, from
you.
Solar Grove. Thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
That's it from Tech Talk this week. We very much appreciate your company. And if you like what you heard, do share it with a friend. And if you've got a comment, a question, a correction, anything like that, we always love to hear from you. You can get in contact in the usual way, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. But from myself, Dave Williams, Hubert Pavalkovich, and Callum Stoneman, until next time, bye-bye.
Bye for now.
Goodbye.